We are holding a bit less than halfway down across Zion on the bay. The line begins to hang up. Eight lines from the narrow line. Okay, we were learning, we were discussing the whole question of how we know that Shechita is done by cutting the neck, and also how we know the difference that Behemoth require both simonim to be cut, and Ophis require only one simon to be cut. So we had a number of different ways of learning. The last thing we said was we have a pasuk that says Zois Torah Habehemah V'Oif. And so we said we had a couple of different ways what we're learning from that. We had the Tanakhama of a Braita that we brought at the beginning of the Yomod, said that the similarity between Oif and Behemah is that both of them require Shechita, but because it says Zois, it means only an animal requires Roif Shnayim, an Oif does not. Then we have Rabbi Eliezer saying the other way around, that because it says Zois. Because it says Zois, therefore it means that there's a distinction between the Behemah and the Oif. Behemah requires two simonim, the Oif requires only one. Then we have Rabbi Eliezer saying kind of the other way around. We know that an Oif, that Malika is done from the neck, because Mimola or Oif. So the same thing, an animal, the Shechita takes place at the neck. But how do we know that, with Shechita that's not done from the back of the neck? That's because since the pasuk says Molech at the Rosh Shoy, it means only the head of a bird is taken off beginning from the back, but not when it comes to Malika, but not when it comes to Shechita, and not when it comes to Shechita of birds, and not when it comes to Shechita of animals.
The
Tanakhama had said that Zois means Tertus of Behemah and Tertus of Oif are different, that Tertus of Behemah needs two and Tertus of Oif only needs one. Rabbi Eliezer says the other way around, that if it weren't for Zois, you would think that Behemoth also needs only one simon. Zois teaches you that unlike an Oif, which requires only one simon, at least when it comes to a Chathas, the Oif, a Behemoth requires two.
Why can't you say that from Behemoth you have two, Oif also should have two?
That's the thing. The Tanakhama had argued that. That e malahalam b'roif shnayim afkan b'roif shnayim tamad lema Zois. Rabbi Eliezer, who's learning the other way around, who's learning from an Oif, where we know that only one simon has to be cut in the case of Malika, so therefore, he needs to know. So how do we know by Behemoth that's not enough? And the answer is the word Zois teaches us that unlike an Oif, which requires only one, a Behemoth requires two. That's the answer.
In support of the Tanakhama and not Rabbi Eliezer, the Torah starts naming Behemoth and then Oif.
That's fine. Rabbi Eliezer learns the other way around. That, because he can learn the other way around, because Zois Torah the Behemoth of Oif, we're learning from the Oif to the Behemoth to know where Shechita takes place, namely at Neh. However, Zois teaches us that only an Oif requires one sim, and a Behemoth requires two.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. You don't understand, but
the
Torah starts talking to Zois Torah to Behemoth, Baha Oif. But in other words, the point is we're comparing the Behemoth to the Oif. We don't know where the Behemoth Shechita takes place. We do know where it takes place by the Oif, namely at neck. Therefore, we learn from the Oif to the Behemoth. And the Zois teaches us, however, the Behemoth is not like the Oif in needing only one sim. Okay. So that's where we're holding. The line begins to Behemoth, about 10 lines from the bottom of the narrow line. Tony Bakapara. Bakapara taught 10 lines from the end of the narrow line. So, Tony Bakapara. Zois Torah Sabahemavoi. Here's another thing that we're going to learn from this Pasuk Zois Elo. Zois Torah Sabahemavoi. Like this. The actual Pasuk goes Zois Torah Sabahemavoi. V'chol Nefesh Achaya Haremetet Samoi. This is the Torah of the animals and the birds and everything that lives in the water. You have three different kinds of life forms mentioned there. You have behemoth, you have ophis, and you have things that live in the water, fish and other water creatures. So, hikdil akosiv la'oif ben behemoth la'dogim means that the Torah is putting the bird between the animals and the fish. And from that we learn, so now we have to figure out what does that tell us about how many simonim it means. L'chayve b'shnei simonim yekshe, you can't say that means that birds require two simonim, shekahokish la'dogim, because you have a hekish between birds and fish, and just as fish don't require shchita at all, as we're going to talk about in a few lines how we know that. So therefore you can't say that birds should require two simonim when you have a hekish between them and fish which don't require any. In this passage, Zois Torah Sabahemah Va'oif B'chol Nefesh Achaya Haremet Samoyim. So L'Poitre B'loi Klumi, actually you can't say that a bird doesn't need any Shechita at all with any Simen Shechava Fish L'Behemah, because you have a Hekish on the other hand with a Behemah, which requires two Simonim. Okay, Sad, so how do we reconcile it? Put Hechsheda B'Simen Echon. It means that birds, the Hechsher, you only need to Shech one Simen. So that's that's it. So that's another way of learning. So we have so far a few ways of learning how we know that a bird only requires one simen as opposed to an animal needs two. The Tanakama of the previous Braisa had said the word zois teaches us that unlike the behemoth requires two, an oif only requires one. The word zois teaches us that. Rabbi Eliezer said zois only applies. Zois, the Tanakama would say that the word zois teaches us that the rule of two simonim only applies to a behemoth. Rabbi Eliezer would say the other way around, that the rule of one simon only applies to an oif. Therefore, the rule of two simonim must apply to a behemoth. But Kapora is saying because the oif is between the behemoth and the jogu. Which, by the way, Mepharshim should point out, the point of that is, you know, earlier in that same parak, this pasuk that we're quoting, Zois Peres HaBehem of our Oif, is at the end of Parashat Shmini. Earlier in Parak Yud Aleph, in Parashat Shmini, it starts by listing first the land animals, then the fish, then the birds. So you're expected to keep the same order at the end of the parashat. So if instead it puts the birds before the fish, that's meant to teach us, Bar Kapara says, something about the rules for Shechti. Okay.
Because otherwise it would have
said it in the same order as before, Behemoth, Jogim, and the Noif.
Oh. Why does it say Dogim in the middle?
That's the point. It doesn't say Dogim. Why does it say earlier by Simonic Asherus? I don't know, but that's another question. But the point is, when it comes to this pasuk at the end of the parasha, when it mentions Zois Tertus, the Behemoth of our Oif, V'chol Nefesh Achaya, Hare Meses, Famoyim, for the birds are in the middle to teach us that you have a progression over there. Two Simonim, one Simon, hello, zero Simonim. Okay, so that's the question. Dogim, the latter. They sure they do. They have an esophagus. They have some kind of windpipe. I mean, they don't breathe in the same way we do, but they have gills, and I don't know if they have a windpipe exactly the same as we do, but they have gills, but they have something. So they have some structure in their neck that transports oxygen from their gills into their body. You know, whatever. So it could be the equivalent of a condom. The point is, but anyway, they definitely have a vest. They definitely have an esophagus. Okay. So the question is, Dogim Dalav Bnei Shchita Ninu Menolon. Fine, where Taka do we know that fish don't require Shchita at all? After all, if you're going to have in the Pasuk over here, Zos Teres HaBehemah V'Oif V'Chol Nefesh Achaya, maybe it means that fish do require some kind of Shchita. Ilema Mishum Dechzir, are you going to argue on the basis of this that it says in the Pasuk, in Parashas Bahaloscha, when the Jewish people are asking for meat, and they're complaining for meat, and Moshe says to Hashem, Could any amount of sheep or cattle be shechted for them? Could all the fish in the sea be gathered for them? So therefore, you would argue it means so you would argue therefore that it means yosef gathering them therefore is functionally the equivalent of shechting when it comes to sonuvacher, and therefore you would say all you need is by fish gathering is enough. The problem with that is Elamei Atah Gabei Slav, fine, but what are you going to do with what it says by the Slav in that same parak, also in Baha'u'llah? When it says that, okay, so Hashem sends Slav, Hashem sends birds that fly into the camp over there, Yichtiv, and the Pasuk says, Vayasu with a Slav, they gathered the Slav. They weren't dead, they flew in. They flew in, and then again, the people gathered them. Are you going to tell me that means they didn't shech them either? You just said before that birds of necessity require some kind of shechita because you have a hekesh between them and the behemoth. Yes, they were alive and then apparently they shechted them. But yes, the pasuk uses the word vayasfu as a flood. They gathered the flood. So therefore, in other words, obviously the word vayasfu in and of itself comes down in the base, does not exclude shechita. The answer is there's a difference. Yes, but the difference is, by the slav, yes, it uses the word vayatsu, but it's not substituting for the word shchita that you would find by other creatures. It's not like it says something like vayishchatu, the animals, and vayatsu with a slav, which then you could say that it means that asifa stands in place of shchita. Hacha, but in the pasuk that, the first pasuk that we quoted, hatsona vaka yishachat lahem, you have that contrast. It has the expression shchita yishachet lahem by sonuvaker, and then it continues by the geayam yeoset lahem. It'll be gathered. So therefore, you have the gathering is meant to be as a contrast to and as a parallel to the shchita, and therefore, yes, from that topic we can indeed learn that fish only require asita. So therefore, they don't actually require shchita. Mind you, yeah, just to catch them. Mind you, you have the Sadia going, who understands our Gemara, to say that it means, fine, you don't have to shech fish, obviously, but on the other hand, if they died on their own, that's no good either. you would learn that atzifa means exactly like that. You have to caught them while they're alive, and then afterwards they die. The Rambam does not learn like that. The Rambam learns that it doesn't matter. You can eat fish that die on their own, and that indeed is how the halacha is in Shulchan Aruch. Technically, well, maybe not. I mean, it could be a diet on its own because it's a fish. It could be a diet on its own because, let's say, the water dried up or whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is, you're allowed to eat them even if they died without being fished or whatever. Technically, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you'd even be allowed to eat them alive. There's no issue of Eivim and Achai with them, but it's a cruel thing to do. So it's not so much, well, it's cruel, first of all, but also it's a disgusting thing to do, so therefore you're not allowed to do it in the Tzaddah. So now let's talk more about this business, about different kinds of creatures and what kind of shchita they do or don't require. Dorash Oiver Grila. Oiver, either that was his name or it means somebody passing through, from the Galil, gave a drosha as follows. The difference is like this. Behemesh and Nibbeth Minaya Basha, land animals which were created from the dry land on the sixth day of Maaseh Bereishis, Hechsher B'Shnei Simanim. Therefore, they require two simanim to be shechted for them to be kosher. Dogim, Shinivru, Minamayim, on the other hand, fish are the exact opposite. They were created from the water, therefore, Hechsher and B'Leitwub. Therefore, they don't require any Hechsher at all, and they don't require Shchit. Oip, Shinivru, Minarekak. Birds, which are sort of halfway in between, they were created from the mud, from a mixture of dirt and water, as we'll see soon, we'll explain how we know that, Hechsher of the Simenacha. Therefore, their Hechsher is with one Simen, because they're sort of halfway between animals and, between animals and fish. We're also made by an Hanami, but a person you don't check, right? But yeah. So actually, though, since you mention it, well, okay. Oh, one second. Omer of Shmuel Kaputka, sort of Shmuel Kaputka says on this Teda, you can see from that birds were made in a way somewhat similar to fish, that there was water involved in making them. Also, Sharei Oifis Yeshlan Kalketes Braglayim to Dogim, because fish have scales on their feet birds have scales on their feet similar to fish. So therefore, you see that there's a certain similarity between them and fish, and therefore, yes. Now, Tosfos says, what kind of the fact is, we have, the Pasuk says, Yishutzu Amayim, which I'm going to quote in a second, Yishutzu Amayim Sheres Nefesh Chaya Ba'Oifi Oifis. So we see very clearly from the Pesukim that birds were created from water. Why do we need this proof from the fact that they have scales on their feet? The fact that we have that it says something in a Pasuk in the Torah is the strongest proof for us, more than examining the feet of birds. But Tosfos says, the point is, that we're not putting a proof that they were created from water. You're right, that we know from the pasuk. But in other words, since, as the Gemara is going to tell us in a second, they were actually created from a mixture of earth and water, there's both, you want to put Shmuel Kaputka is pointing out, you see, though, how strong the effect of the water is on them, the fact that they were created from water, that they have that similarity to fish. Therefore, that's reason enough to say that affects the dinim as far as shchita, that therefore they're halfway between animals and fish and require only one sin.
Because snakes also they have scales.
That may be, but snakes aren't kosher animals. No. So if they were, then fine. If they were kosher, then we would talk about how many simonim they need, but they don't, so they're not. Okay. This that was saying that the difference, depending whether they were created from earth or from water or from both, affects how many simonim need to be shechted. So there's a number of interesting explanations about that. The Marsha brings like this. Earth is more earthy. It's more chumri a stick than water. And water more so than air, etc. So therefore, the idea is the more chumri a stick, the lower down in the hierarchy of creation a creature is, the more shchita it needs, so to speak. So like animals, therefore, that are created from the dirt, which is the lowest thing, they require the maximum amount of shchita. And then birds less so, and fish not at all. There's also an idea that's brought in that connection that each of these things is closer to a person and that a person gets more use out of them. A person gets regular use out of animals, less so out of birds, and even less so out of fish. I mean, you eat them, but that's it. You can't really use fish for any kind of useful work. As opposed to animals, you know, at least up until 100 years ago, people used animals constantly.
How do you classify ducks and geese?
Ducks and geese, right? Birds.
They swim?
Yeah, they're birds.
Fly?
Never forget, they're birds. They fly, so they're birds. In Torah terminology, anything that flies the bird, which is why when we get towards the end of the third paragraph and we talk about the simonim of kosher and non-kosher birds, the list of oifos in the Torah, the last one on the list is atalek, which most of them are kosher, translated as a bat. A bat is not a bird, it's a mammal, but it flies, so as far as the Torah is concerned, it belongs together with the birds. anything that flies, a bird, same thing, anything that swims, and there's a fish, so therefore, for example, whales are classified as fish in TOTUS terminology, even though also they're mammals, etc. Okay.
Rhinos, they swim also.
Right, okay, but most of the time, they spend most of their time outside of the water. They have legs, and they...
swimming. Yeah.
Okay, the point is, in other words, they spend their whole life in the water, like they, you know, do they come out of it or not? And then you have amphibians that spend part of their time in it and part not. Okay. There is an explanation that's brought in a few places in Chassidus that ever brings it in the Shema that he wrote in when he during the last year in France and Vichy afterwards, a somewhat similar but a little bit different. Afterwards, a couple of years later, that ever wrote a letter about it, which is an Igros Todesh. That the idea is that also you have therefore the different kinds of life forms we're talking about over here, animals versus birds versus fish. Represent, among others, they represent the tzaddik, the Beinoni, and the Rasha. And therefore each one, or not even necessarily Beinoni and Rasha per se, but like the people who are more into Chumrius, more into Gashmius, and therefore like they need more, so to speak, like they need more Shchita, they need more Ein v'shachat elo moshach, like Mar tells us in a couple of blasts. The Shchita involves drawing the thing out from mundanity, from klippus into kedusha. So therefore, like a person is on the level of a behemoth, needs more of that than a person is on the level of a bird, and who needs still less than the level of a fish. Fish, by the way, it's brought in a number of other sfarim, also represents tzaddikim, which is one idea why it's important to eat fish. On Shabbos, there's an idea that's brought in sfarim from the shamas of tzaddikim on this galgal on fish, and that way we eat it on Shabbos. Yeah. So. In a letter from Tavshin Gimel that ever talks about a different idea, that also the animal represents the guf and the nefesh abahamis, the bird represents the nefesh asichlis, the intellectual abilities of a person, the fish represents the nefesh alikis, which is always connected to Hashem, just as a fish is always in the water that it lives in, and therefore also you have like each one of them needs their own way of being misbader, of being brought closer to Helikos.
Was there ever was in Vichy during the war?
Yes, for a brief time.
For how long?
For a few months. Okay, anyway, let's go on. For a few months.
Which year
was that? I don't know, 1940, maybe early 41, I don't have to look it up. All right, let's go on. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara says more on this topic of how birds were created. The Gemara says, but Oid Sharon, also he asked him. Now, who is the who asked who? So Rashi brings, there's a Gemara in Bechorus that mentions a number of questions that contricked and had Hegmon, some Roman official, asked Rav Gamliel. Tosfos says actually it wasn't Rav Gamliel, it was Rav Yehoshua ben Zakkai. But whatever it is, there's a whole bunch of questions that he asked him there, trying to disprove Torah or whatever, and each time Rav Gamliel or Rav Yehoshua ben Zakkai proved to him that you don't know what you're talking about, and Torah is true. So here's another one he asked him. One pasuk says on the fifth day that Hashem says the water should swarm with living creatures, meaning fish and other water creatures and birds that fly. Almi mimaya ivru, which shows therefore that birds are created from the water. Uksiv, and then later on you have in Perek Beis, you have Vayitzer Hashem alekim min ha'adama kochayat pasada ve'etzkalay pashamayim, that Hashem created from the earth all of the animals of the field and all the birds of the heavens. Almi ara ivru, so you see that birds are created from the dirt. So which is it, water or dirt? Amalai, the Rav Gamliel, the Rav Yehoshua ben Zakkai answers him, as we just said, min ha'rakak nivru, they were created from mud, from a mixture of dirt and water. Ra tamidim mistaklim ze'achor, afterwards, okay, so contrickling leaves. So Ra tamidim mistaklim ze'achor, so Rav Gamliel, or Rav Yehoshua ben Zakkai, sees his tamidim looking at each other, like, is that a real answer? Yeah. Or what kind of an answer is that? Amalahim, they didn't like the answer. So he said, Omalahem, so he says to them, Kosha Beinechem Shadachiti is Ovi Batash, you're finding it hard that I pushed away my enemy with a straw, like I used a weak answer on him, just to say that, okay, it means that it was a little of both. The real answer is, Minamayim Nivu. The real answer is, you're right. Fish are basically created from water. The Lama Havi and Allah Adam, so why did Hashem bring them to Adam? Likrais Lahem Shem, to call them names. In other words, that when the Pasuk says, it doesn't mean actually that Hashem created them from the earth. It means that Hashem brought them to Adam in order that he should name them. In fact, Rashi mentions on the pasuk that on the pasuk over there, Vayitzer can also mean like Meloshin Mother, Meloshin like hemming them in with a siege or whatever. Like Hashem put them under Adam's control. So that's what it is. Really, they're created, because he had to give them all names. Yeah. So therefore, so it's not talking about that they were made from the earth, but rather the pasuk is describing that the animals which were made from the earth, as well as, by the way, Hashem also brought the birds, even though they were created from the water, to for Adam to name them.
So
he's saying that they're the answer for the goy is a weak answer, he's saying. But v'yesh omrim, some say the other way around. V'loshen achar omalah lois the hegmon over loshen rishon omalahem l'tamidav. Some say the other way around, that the second answer, that the pasuk doesn't mean they were created from earth at all, it's just describing how they're brought to Adam for him to name them. That, according to that, the second version, that was the answer that he gave to the contrition, the hegemon. And the first answer, the one about that they were created from mud, is what he told the Talmidim. In other words, according to that second version, that's the real answer. And the reason why that second Lashon says that would be the correct way, Mishum Dechtiv Al Bayifter, because When it says, it is in connection with Vayisr, it is in connection with that he created them, and therefore that would have to mean that he had that describing how he created them, and if the Pasuk is saying he created them out of earth, then you have to say it means that they're partly created out of earth.
The word
Vayisr, according to the second version, does not mean, like we said before, that it means Malashon Moser, like putting them under Adam's control or whatever. It literally means creating. So if it's saying that he created them out of the dirt, and previously it says he created them out of the water, then the true answer must be that he created them out of mud, and then for contrition, according to the second version, for contrition, he didn't want to tell them that, so he just told them that it means it's not talking about their creation at all, it just means that he brought them to Adam to make.
So it was created out of both?
So that's, we have two different versions of what the answer, of what the real answer is, and what the fake answer is. The first version is the real answer is that they were brought to Adam just to name. They were created only out of the water. And the fake answer is that they were created out of mud. The second version says the other way around. The real answer is they were created out of mud. And the fake answer is that he just brought them to Adam to name, and it's not describing how they were created out of.
See, that's okay. Like what it worked also.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. I mean, Rashi brings another explanation from his Rebbeim that because in the earlier pasuk it says va'oifi oifik al ha'aret, so that itself implies that there must have been dirt involved in making them also. In other words, even though the pasuk is saying that since it continues that they should fly al ha'aretz, then that implies that earth is somehow involved as well, and therefore the second pasuk confirms that by saying that Hashem created them min Adam. Okay, fine. Okay, of Yehuda Mishum Rav Yitzchok Ben Pinchas. So either version, you have one version with the answer he gave to Talmidim, and the other answer is what he gave for this country. Okay. Amen of Yehuda Mishum of Yitzchak ben Pinchas. Ein shechita la'ot min ha'torah. Min ha'torah, there's no concept that birds have to be shechted. This that we said before, the hekesh, zoyf teres ha'behem of ha'oif, that just means to teach us, like Rabbi Eliezer had said before, that since birds, malika is done from the neck, that teaches us where shechita should be done for an animal, also for the neck. But not to teach us that birds actually require shechita. It would be, according to this opinion, it would be only midrabanan. Now, Rashi does explain a bit. We're going to see how we learn that. But Rashi explains, it doesn't just mean however a bird died. The fact of the matter is, the Torah does tell us there's a concept of nevela of birds. We've learned a number of times already that it makes a person tummy when they swallow it. So what it means is, in other words, Rashi stresses, it would mean, in other words, if the bird died on its own or it was killed in some other way, sure, it would be nevela and you wouldn't be allowed to eat it. But Rabbi Yehuda is telling us that if it was cut, you, in the simonim, even if it wasn't a proper shchita, even if there was drata, even if there was ikur, even if there was whatever, as long as the simonim were somehow involved, then the bird is min ha'torah, kosher to eat, and it's only midrabanan that you have to have all the usual rules of shchita.
That's according to
Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav Yitzchok ben Pinchas. And he says that, how do we know shenema? Because the pasuk is the shachach, because the pasuk describes that a person kills a wild animal or a bird, and the expression in the pasuk is the shachach, he spills the blood, implying the shvicha ba'al mesagi. So it's enough, I mean, I've heard it, to just do something that involves spilling the blood without having to do a proper shvicha with all the rules. Okay, so the question is, yichochi chaya nami, the shachach means the shvicha ba'al mesagi. The question is, that pasuk mentions both chaya and oif. Asher yosu tzed chaya oif asher ya'ocho, v'shofach as dom. So yichochi chaya nami, then you should argue the same thing applies to a wild animal. The answer is no, because a wild animal, itkash l'psuleh ha'mukdashim. Because the answer is, you have a different place, you have a hekesh between wild animals and still the animal production. We're going to quote the pasuk later on in the Sugya and Chafek, but you have a pasuk that mentions that when you have an animal that was meant to be used as a carbon, and now it became possible, developed a mum, or what have you, so the pasuk says you can shecht it, you can eat it, katsvi v'chayil. We see it, katsvi v'chayil, like a deer or like a gazelle, which are chayil. So we see, therefore, that there's a comparison between stola amokdashim, which are domestic animals, and chayis. So we see that chayis requires shita. So the question is, oif nami itkish l'behema, dichtiv zoi tzeret l'behema v'oif. Okay, but we have the hekish that we said before, zoi tzeret l'behema v'oif. So there's also a hekish between domestic animals and birds. So why are you saying birds don't require shita? The answer is, okay, b'shapach hasdomai. Okay, but on the other hand, against that, you have the word b'shapach hasdomai, which implies that all you need is something that involves spilling the blood, not a proper shita. So the question is, my chosis, so in that case, so we're back to, you have a hekesh when it comes to chayim. You have a hekesh when it comes to oif. But you're arguing that, on the other hand, the word b'shapach hasdomai only refers to the bird. Why? What makes you say that it applies to the bird more than to the chayim? You're going to say because there's a hekesh, you have a hekesh by birds, and you have a hekesh by chayim. Why is one stronger than the other? So that's the question. My chosis, the shadulay al oif. What makes you say, therefore, that the b'shapach hasdomai refers only to a bird? Shadya chaya, maybe say it refers only to the chaya, and that undoes the hekesh that we would otherwise say. The reason is mixtabra, yes, but it's logical to say that it applies to the bird, mishum disolik mine, because that's the last one that it mentioned. The wording in the pasuk is, asher yotzei tzeid chaya, oif asher ye'achol, b'shapach hasdomai. So the word b'shapach hasdomai immediately follows oif asher ye'achol, a bird that can be eaten. So therefore, not a hekesh, but in other words, so therefore, even though we have a hekesh, zoi tzeret l'behema v'oif, we have to say that that hekesh is teaching us something else on the ground that, since we have right after oif, we have b'shapach hasdomai, implies that birds don't actually require shechita. So therefore, the hekesh, zoi tzeret l'behema v'oif, would be teaching us, like Rabbi Eliezer said before, that since we know a bird, melika, is done on the neck, then we learn from that that an animal shechita is done on the neck. But not to say that birds that are not korbanos do not require shchita, should require shchita at all? No, because of shalom.
Okay.
You have to do something that involves spilling the blood and cutting the simonim, as Rashi said, but not necessarily an actual shchita with all the rules of shahiyah and derasa and so forth.
Shchita of birds only comes from which pasuk?
So we're saying over here, because we're saying over here that according to this mandamar, we learn it from the shapach hasdomai. On the one hand, we have zois teres abehem of ois, but we're using that to teach us that birds, when it comes to korbanos, require melika at the neck. Therefore, animals for korbanos or for cholin require shchita at the neck. But there's no source from that birds that are not korbanos require shchita. And therefore, since the shapach hasdomai tells us that not, then not. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to try to prove. So now the Gemara is going to try to bring some proofs one way or the other to this opinion. Okay, Meister Gemara says, I have a contradiction. We learned in the first parak, and we're going to learn later on in the parak about, we're going to have a parak later on in Arma Sechta about Kisui Adam, about the dinim of covering the blood after you shecht a wild animal or a bird. And the Mishnah says, if somebody shechted a wild animal or a bird, and it became nevela in his hand, in other words, he didn't do a proper shechta, so it ended up being nevela, hanoicher, or he stabbed the creature, noicher can mean stabbing, ripping out, whatever it involves, it's not a proper shechta, v'ma'acher, or he ripped out the simonim, potter malachasos. In all those cases, he's potter from doing kisui adam, because the pasuk says, I show you achol, that the chayo or the oif has to be edible, and now it's not edible because it wasn't a proper shechita. The pasuk is, the ishish m'b'nei, I should yosud seid chaya, if a person captures a wild animal, oif or a bird, I show you achol, which can be eaten, the shafak is dumb, if it's so bad, then he has to pour out the blood on the ground and cover over dirt. So therefore, and the Mishnah is telling us that if it wasn't a proper shchita, you pass it from kisui adam. So why? The amak ain't shchita la'oif minatarda. If you're going to tell me that birds don't require shchita minatarda, nechira say zui shchitase. Effectively, doing nechira on this bird, the raita, is equivalent to doing shchita on an animal. Therefore, the boy kisui. Therefore, it should require kisui adam. Because, meaning in other words, that you did an improper shchita, but you're saying that a bird doesn't require shchita min atzara, so good, in that case, you killed it in a way that makes it mutter to eat, it's asher ye'ochol, it can be eaten, why should he be potter from kisui adam? The answer is, mi sabar ba'oif, you're thinking that those words in the Mishnah, hanocha ba'ma'aker, are referring to a bird, like, b'chaya, not necessarily, maybe they're only referring to b'chaya, in other words, the Mishnah is saying that if In other words, all these cases, the Mishnah is saying, Asherusot in a snabble of yadu, anochav amasko, these are all talking about if you're doing the shchita or nechiro or whatever of a wild animal. For sure, everybody agrees that needs shchita. But therefore, if you didn't do a proper shchita, then you're possible from kesi adam. But the Mishnah is not necessarily telling us the same thing would apply to a bird. Maybe taka a bird. If you did nochav amasko or what have you, you'd still need kesi adam because midarai, so you'd be able to eat it. Hold on. We haven't gotten to halacha yet. Relax. Fine. Toshma, come, the food is, okay, by the way, I forgot, Simon, Nisnabel, Dan, the Malika. Yeah, okay, Nisnabel, Dan, the Malika, we had a Simon, because those are, simon, the key words, the first one began with Hashershet, Nisnabel, the other, the second one is Hashershet, the Sarif, Ladan, and the third one is a case for Malika. These are the three proofs that we're trying to bring against Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Toshma, Hashershet, the Sarif, Ladan, again, later on, in Perkisi Adam, we say, a Braisa, that if somebody is shechting because he needs the blood, Chayev L'chassis, then he's still going to be have to do Kisi Adam. So then, that's a problem, because if he needs the blood for some kind of malacha, then that's not going to work. Case that who oisa, so what should he do to avoid that? Either he should do Nechira, or he should do Akira, something which is not a proper shita. That way, he doesn't have to do Kisi Adam, that way he doesn't have to cover the blood. Then he can use the blood for whatever he needs. That's what we're going to see. My love, shouldn't we assume that the Braisa is talking about a case of shechting a bird, or trying to kill a bird, and we know that bird blood is useful, the Kabayle Dome Lyanicha, because the blood of a bird is useful against Yanicha, which is, Rashi says, worms that grow in woolen garments, so like moths or larvae of moths or whatever, or baby moths or whatever, it's useful against them. I guess it's like a moth repellent, I don't know. For those days, anyway.
The
I have no idea. Spread it with it. If you just put a container of it over there, I have no idea. But whatever it is, the point is that if we assume that's what it means, and there we're obviously talking about a bird, because you don't use higher blood for that purpose. It doesn't have the same moth repellent effect, whereas bird blood does. So therefore, obviously, that means you're talking about that you were going to shech the bird, and instead we're saying you do no chromatic. And if the braisa is telling us you don't do kisei adam, why not? Because not a proper shita. So birds require a proper shita against what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. The answer is no, because that's not necessarily what it means that you needed the blood, because it could be talking about b'chaya, the braisa could be talking about a wild animal, and you're not going to use it as moth repellent, fine, but you could use it for a different purpose. To kaboyle, ledome, lelaka, it could be you need its blood in order to make a certain kind of red dye that's used for leather. So therefore, okay, so you have also it's possible to... Yes, so there you want chaya blood. There you want chaya blood. So the braisa could be talking only about that. The braisa might not be talking about the case where you need bird blood. Maybe, in fact, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not going to have a way to make it work over there, because no matter what you do, whether it's shchita or nechira or akira, midaraisa, the bird is going to be able to be eaten, therefore you're going to need to do kisei adam. But with a chaya, you have an option. You can do nechira or akira, and that way you don't have to do kisei adam, and that way you have the blood available for the dying. But no proof against him yet. Toshma, let's bring a third one. This is a Mishnah we learned in Tzvachim. Molach b'sakin, we learned over there, that if the Kohen does malika of a bird for a korban with a knife, which malika is supposed to be done with a fingernail, it wouldn't, because it's done from the back, and it's done by crushing. Right. So therefore, it's neither malika nor shchita. It's possible, and therefore mitame begodim abeis avliya. Therefore, if a person were to eat a kazayis from this bird, it would be mitame him as he's swallowing it. It would be mitame him in his clothes as he's swallowing it, as usual with nivlat oisah. Now, the amrit and shchita la'oif min ha-Torah, if you, Rabbi Yehuda, are telling us that min ha-Torah birds don't require shchita, meaning, again, in other words, that you don't need all the rules of shchita, as long as you somehow cut the simanim and it's good enough, well then, nihinami, so okay, granted, kitabal le-shedro mafrekes avilet-trefa, granted, okay, you start doing the liquor from the back, so therefore you broke through the spinal cord, you broke through the spine itself, without roish basa, because we learned before roish basa would be enough to make it nevela, we learned in the previous paragraph. But fine, so havilah treifa, fine, you could argue at that point it made it treifa. Still, ta'ani lo sakin matara midei nevela. Still, we know that a bird that is treifa can be saved, or an animal for that matter, that's treifa, can be saved from having tumas nevela by doing a proper shchita. You won't be allowed to eat it, but at least this way, it won't be matana, the usual tuma of a nevela, of an animal or a bird. So why is that Mishnah in Zvachim telling us that if you did malika with a knife, then the bird is completely nevela, and it'll be matame the person when he swallows it? you should argue, fine, you started by making it a strafe, by cutting through the back of the neck with a knife instead of cutting through the front of the neck, which would be a proper strafe. But now you're saving the situation by doing, by finishing up the shritah and cutting through the simanim. So, okay, it's not a shritah or a melitta because it's pressing, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need a proper shritah as long as you cut through the simanim. The bird is, it's not mutter to eat. Fine, in this case, you can argue it's not mutter to eat because it became a shritah already, but at least it's not going to be matamet tumas nevela. So that seems to contradict Rabbi Yehuda. If you say that birds require shchita min atorah, then that answers it. No shchita means in the mela. But if you say birds don't require proper shchita min atorah, then all you have is that the neck has to be somehow cut. Well, fine, the neck was cut. So therefore, what's the problem? Why is it tumah tumas nevela?
Why even bustle?
No, fine. That fact that it's possible is because you didn't do the melikta with a fingernail, which would make it kosher for a carbon. Instead, you did it with a knife. And you're pressing, so therefore it's neither shchita nor melitta. So therefore, and the point is also you cut through the spine, you cut through the spinal cord, so you made the bird trick.
This situation, if it would be used to eat, that's how carbon. Same story, right?
Well, so that's the point. No, in other words, we would say like this: if you did melitta, then you would say if it's carbon, then it can be brought in a carbon. If it's a chatas ha'oif, then the carbon can even eat it. Like this, where he did melikka, where he did quote-unquote melikka with a knife. So what he accomplished is he made the bird trefa by cutting through the spinal cord, because we'll learn in the next parak, in Ela Trefa, that the spinal cord is one of those things that if it gets cut, the animal is a trefa, because it's not going to live afterwards for too long. But nevertheless, the din is, even an animal is trefa, and you shecht it, it's not metame chumas nevela. You can't eat it, because it's trefa, but it's not metame at a person if he touches or carries it or swallows it or what have you. So why is the Mishnah saying that the person is going to become tamei from swallowing a piece of this bird? According to Rabbi Yehuda, we should say it was trefa, and then it was b'shafach hazdamai. So therefore, that's good enough on a deraisa level to make it that's not nevela.
But when you do when you bring a bird in the blia, it's not tamei, and it's still the tamei.
Hold on, no. When a person takes a kazayis of the nevela of an oif tohar, a bird that was of a kosher species, but it was a nevela, it wasn't shechted properly, and he swallows the kazayis of it, the moment he's swallowing it, as it goes into the Beit Abliya, he becomes tameh, and whatever clothes he's wearing becomes tameh. So fine, we know that did. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, why would that apply if you did melikah with a knife? The fact is you did end up cutting through the simanim. It wasn't a proper shechita. According to him, you don't need a proper shechita. You can't eat it fine because you made it a trefa before you shechted, because you cut through the spine, but it should not be nevela. It should be trefa rather than nevela. And trefa does not make a person chomei when he eats it.
One second, you would agree that in the case of blia, it would be metameh.
That's the question. Why? The Mishnah is telling us it's metameh, but why should it be metameh? It's not nevela. On the face of it, at worst, it's a trefa. So therefore, that's the question. He said that you don't require shchita for a bird, minatara. Meaning, in other words, that as long as you cut through simanim, that it's considered on a deraisa level a valid shchita. So what's the problem? The answer is you're right. You do have the Tana of that Mishnah in Zvachim hold that birds do require shchita minatara. So therefore, no proper shchita means the bird was nevela. But that doesn't contradict Rabbi Yehuda, even though he's an Amora, because he has another Tana who supports him. Huda Amar Ki Hai Tana. He can be saying according to the following Tana. The Tana, as we learn in a Braita, Rabbi Lazar Akapa Berebi Yomer. Berebi, by the way, doesn't mean the son of Rebbe. In a number of places in Chas, we have Berebi or Beribi or whatever. It means the great Talmud Chacham. The Rabbi Lazar Akapa Beribi is the Yomer. Ma Talmud Loimer Ach Kasha Yachal Tatsvi Yomer. So you have this pasuk that we were mentioning before, that says when you have an animal that's fully amukdash, and you had an animal for a korban, for example, that developed a mum, we say that the pasuk is telling you, you're allowed to shecht it and eat it wherever you want. And the pasuk says, ah, tasha ya'achal tzvi b'sa'ay, or the same as a deer or gazelle is eaten, the same way you can eat this. What are we supposed to be learning from a deer or a gazelle that we need to know that we wouldn't have otherwise known about Sulaim of Joshua? So therefore, Hareza Balalamid Benim Salamid. So this is one of those stukim where it seems like the Pasuk is telling us, you should know, here is something you know already about Tzvi and Ayah. So we're informing you that, I'm informing you, the Pasuk is saying that the same rule applies to Sulaim of Joshua. Really, it's the other way around. We learn something from Sulaim of Joshua to Tzvi and Ayah. Even though the Pasuk is phrasing it as if, like, there's a fact we know about Tzvi and Ayel, and you should know that fact applies to Tzvi and Ayel, it's really the other way around. meaning we learn like this. Mas Sola HaMakdashin b'shechita, just like Sola HaMakdashin need to be shechted, and that we know for sure, because they are domestic animals. By definition, any creature that was going to be used as a korban had to have been a domestic animal, because you can only bring cows, sheep, and goats as korbanos.
Why would
shechita
be
kosher,
but regular would not be?
The
would be allowed.
No, so for animals for kosher also require
shechita. Right.
So yeah. So that's the point.
The point is that it wasn't kosher for Sulei HaMakdashin. It wasn't.
No, no. What we're saying is Mas Sulei HaMakdashin b'shechita, just like Sulei HaMakdashin has to be shechted, and we know that because earlier in that pasuk it says there's a vachtam of korofom mitzvah. So we see that domestic animals, cattle and sheep, have to be shechted in order to be able to eat them. So therefore, Sulei HaMakdashin requires shechita. After the va'ayel b'shechita. Therefore, also the pasuk is comparing between Sulei HaMakdashin and deer and the deer and the gazelle. So therefore, we learn from that that they also require shechita. I also there's a gazelle or some other wild animal, whatever. Let's not get into that right now. We'll deal with the identities of the various animals and
that.
No, an ayol is a ram. Ayil.
Ayil.
Yeah. Ayil is a...
Spelled the same way,
but different nekudas, yeah. Actually, it's the other way around. Ayil with a chizuk is a ram. Ayol with a comet. So that's what I meant. Ayol with a comet. That's what it says here in the passage. It's mentioned in Parashas Re'eh, when it lists the kosher animals, you have the seven wild kosher animals, ayol, tzvi, v'yachmur. So yeah, they're different, some kind of wild creature, a gazelle or an ibex or some such thing, whatever.
Okay.
So from Sulei HaMakdashin, which requires shechita, and we know that because the pasuk says the vachta, therefore we learn from them to also tzvi and ayol.
Which are in the same,
but that's because the pasuk is saying, "Ach kasha ya'achol to tzvi v'atayol kein dechlanu." Just as you eat a deer or a gazelle, so you can eat these. Meaning, in other words, the comparison is actually the other way around. Just as these require shechita, so a deer and a gazelle also require shechita. Okay. Therefore, continues Rabbi Lazar Akasher, birds are not mentioned in that pasuk, and therefore, by elimination, birds don't require shechita min atayra only midrabban. Okay, so. Because he says, teaches us something else, like we said before. It teaches us that just as birds, malika is done by the neck, so animals, shechita, is done at the neck. But nothing to do that birds actually require shechita. So fine, Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Pinchas is following the shechita of Rabbi Lazar HaKaper, so therefore the Mishnah in Zvachim is not a contradiction to him, because fine, the Mishnah is according to one Tana, he's following a different Tana. Okay. So the question is, man Tana the polygalid of Elazar HaKaper. Okay, let's see if we can identify who is the Tana who argues of Elazar HaKaper on that, and who says that birds do require shechita min haTorah. That is Rebbe. Specifically, that is Rebbe, we know, says that. In fact, Tosfos points out also Bakapara says that. We had before Bakapara's drasha about birds requiring one simon because they're between behemoth and dogim. So he holds like Rebbe, fine. He was a Talmud of Rebbe. Usually a Talmud would hold back as Rebbe. But the point is, Tosfos says actually that the reason why the Gemara mentions Rebbe specifically is because we would rather be able to say that the Mishnayos that we were quoting, including the one in Zvachim, go according to Rebbe. Rebbe composed them, finalized the Mishnayos after all. So therefore, it makes more sense to say that a Mishnah goes according to Rebbe. Okay. Where do we see that Rebbe says this? The Tanya, the Lunar Bright, the Rebbe Omer. When the pasuk says "v'zavachta kasher tzivitzicha," the pasuk says you should shecht as I commanded you. So we don't find anywhere in Torah Shabbat where it says the details of what Hashem commanded Moshe about how animals should be shechted. Melamed, from here we learn, "shenitzav Moshe ala vesh falakona." From here we learn that Hashem commanded Moshe about the esophagus and about the windpipe, that those are the two simanim that are involved with shechita. And that, when it comes to a bird, you only need most of one of them to be cut. And by behemoth, you need most of both of them to be cut. And all the other details of shechita. All of those were taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. All of that is hinted at in this pasuk. There's a vachta kasher tzivitzicha.
So really, it's Moshe
Nisinai. So really, it's basically a lot of Moshe Nisinai. That's what we said at the beginning of the parashah. Tosfos actually mentions though a couple of interesting things in it. One is, so you have the word kasher. The word kasher we can break down as follows. You have an aleph, a shin, and a resh. The aleph represents one simon has to be shechted in the bird. The shin represents shnayim, two simonim have to be cut in an animal. And the resh stands for rubo shel echad kamar.
The word kasher,
so the kaf is the prefix, as asher, so therefore it teaches us about echad, about shnayim, and about roiv. Also, Tosfos points out, if you take the word kasher and spell it backwards, resh, shin, aleph, kaf, then you get the abbreviation for Rubai Shel Echad Kamori. Most of any simen is the equivalent of the entire simen. So therefore, that's another remnant in the process to this idea. Balaturim also points out that the words kasher tivisicha, I think it's the word kasher tivisicha in the pasuk, have the same gematria as roi becha ba'oi for roi shnayim the behem. So it's another way of talking about it. Yeah. But ultimately we're saying it's halacha moshe mitzinai, but we have ramazim for it. Okay.
Yeah.
What? Oh, okay.
What?
I'm not sure. What?
What are you saying?
What about
that?
Yeah, there's a story I've heard about it also, that Balaturim composed. That what we know as Balaturim is actually only a small part of the whole Kiddush. He wrote an extensive Kiddush on Chumash, but it's only been printed a few times. It's called Atura Aruch. What we have in our Chumashin as Balaturim is just little paparois, they're called, like little tidbits that he put at the beginning of each parasha. So yeah, there's a story that I've heard also that he composed all that in one night. That's, Yeah, I'm saying there's a longer one called Atura Aruch. Okay, let's go on. Okay.
Bottom line after all this.
The bottom line is that we have an opinion.
You have to cover the blood by ice.
And by Chaya, but only if it was a proper shkita. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Pinchas and like Rabbi Elazar HaKapper. The halacha is like Rebbe and like Bar Kapara and like everybody else we're recording. That birds do require shchita min atzara. Therefore, we don't have to zetzayin the mishnayis and the brayis that we said before in these odd ways that we're talking only about when you that we're talking only about an oif or only talking about a chaya or whatever. No, it's talking straightforward. If you did anything to an oif that's not a proper shchita, then it doesn't require to say that.
Chaya in general does not
kiss Adam. Chaya doesn't kiss Adam. Chaya also. Chaya or Oish.
Chaya or
Behemoth.
You don't go back to Matama, right?
What?
The Matama.
No.
Well.
Which one's on Matama?
Okay, so a nevela of a land animal is Matama. If a person touches it or carries it. The nevela of a bird, of an Oish Tahar, is Matama a person when he swallows it. Okay.
So I guess somehow we don't succumb that a behemoth does not eat Adam.
Because the Pasuk only mentions Chaya and Oif. I mean, later on, when we get the Parashas Adam, we'll discuss it. But yeah, the Pasuk only mentions their Chaya and Oif. Yeah. Fine. Then the Mishnah said Echad Ba'Oif, that you need to shech at least one simon when it comes to a bird. So which simon? Itmar. So we have a discussion about of Amaroi. Rav Nachman Amar Oy Vesht Oy Kone. Rav Nachman says it could be one or the other. You could check only the esophagus or only the windpipe, and that's good enough. Rav Adaba Ava Amar Vesht Veloy Kone. Rav Adaba Ava says no. It means specifically, if you're going to cut only one simen, it has to be the esophagus. Cutting the kone itself, he would learn, is not good enough for an oath. I don't know if it's that it could live or not, but whatever. He's, yeah.
That's very difficult because the vesh is not something the kone.
Okay, that could be because you're right, because the vesh is somewhat behind the kone. It's true, it sits somewhat behind into the side of it. Yeah, okay, but I guess it's the food pipe, right? Okay. So, Rav Nachman, Amar Oy Vesh, Oy Kone, why? Because Echad cuts one, because the Mishnah only says you have to cut one of them. So therefore, Echad called the root. It doesn't matter which one, as long as it's one. Lachatchila, we learned at the beginning of the parak, you're supposed to cut both simonim by a bird. You're supposed to cut the entire both simonim by a bird and by an animal. When we say echad ba'oif, shnayim behema, and rubah shalachim kamayu, those are minimums. Those are b'diyes. Okay. So that's Rav Nachman. Rav Adaba Ava, I'm a vesh leikona, because he says my echad. What is the word? I agree, of course. The Mishnah says roiv echad, but the word echad he would say means miyuchad, like the unique one. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains like this. We've learned before, and we're going to learn later on in the next parak, that there's a difference between the kone and the vesh as far as how much of them, if there's a hole in them, how much is enough to make the animal trish. With the vesh, even a tiny hole makes it trish. If it was done before the trish. Yeah, no, a hole that goes through the wall, that goes through the wall of it, and from the inside of it to the outside, yeah. With the...
The
vesh is the esophagus, the food pipe. Yeah.
There could be a hole in it.
There could be a hole in it. There could be, let's say, for example. Yeah, it could, one possibility could be swallowed a nail. It could be because of an infection. It could be whatever the reason, whatever there could be. Even a small hole in it that's done before shchita would be enough to make the animal trace.
Or that fate because it won't live up.
Well, the general idea of trace is that we'll learn in the next paragraph is that if an animal or a bird won't live for 12 months, then trace. Although we're actually having a cloak about that. But anyway, whatever. The point is, the vesh since the pasture is the idea, since you have food going down it, if there's even a small hole in it, it's going to allow food to leak out into the body cavity, and then you're going to have it's going to set up infections and all kinds of other problems. Whereas the conner, the windpipe, you can have as much as half of its circumference can be cut, and a little less than half, and the animal is still kosher. The pasture is because I guess the air is still able to get through back and forth through the undamaged part. So therefore, the point is, Rav Abba would say, therefore, the conner, the animal's life, so to speak, depends more on the vesh being intact than it does on the conner. There is, by the way, Sicha, where the Rebbe talked about this once and explained that they're based on what we were mentioning before about behemoth versus ophis, representing the different levels of people, how much into gashmius they are or not. But the point is, also, we see from this that with any person, the vesh is more susceptible to problems than the kone, as the vesh representing gashmius, because you eat and drink through it, and the windpipe representing ruchnius, because air passes through it. So therefore, like you can have a person's ruchnius also can have problems and needs to be fixed up, but a problem in the vesh, which is the association with gashmius, is likely to be much more severe even in a small thing.
Meaning
is that exactly what it sounds like. In other words, a person is much more likely to go the wrong way if they have even a small defect in their attitude towards gashmius than with ruchnius. Okay, you know, there can be problems also, but they have to be a much bigger issue in order for it to be a problem. Okay, so simen shachat
is
well, yeah, but in other words, yeah, but a person is understood, but that also involves gashmius, right?
Yeah,
it has a much bigger effect. Yeah. Okay, so simen shachat chatoin gageres p'kiyumet chapa fa'oif. These are six places where we're going to bring from to try and prove against Rav Nachman or against Rav Adabar. Okay, mate. Again, we had Rav Nachman saying that you can shecht either the vesh or the conner by a bird, and Rav Abba Ava saying if you're going to shecht one simon, it has to be the vesh. Okay. So maybe the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, shochach as a vesh. Suppose the person shechted he cut through the vesh, v'achakach nishmachar gagereth, and then the gagereth, which is the windpipe, got pulled out of position. This is the concept we talked about the other day called ikur simonim, where they can get pulled out of position. And by the way, you were discussing then, you were asking, how is it possible? The answer is actually one possibility. Actually, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that mentions, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Shchita, that, for example, it says when you're shechting a chicken, you have to make sure that you either hold it in the air, or you either hold it in the air, or you press its feet down on something, because otherwise, if you allow it to be able to extend its feet itself, then in the course of stretching out, it may pull the simonim out of position. It may stretch them and pull them out of the muscles or whatever that they're attached to. So that's an example of ikur simonim. So here we have, let's say, so he shechted one of the pipes, he shechted the vesh, then the gageres, which is the windpipe, got pulled out of position, which is ikur simonim. So, then there is kosher, because fine, he shechted one simon. Nishmachar gageres v'achakach shachach is a vesh, but if it's the other way around, if first the gageres, the windpipe, got pulled out of position, got pulled out of the muscles or whatever that's attached to, and then he shechted the v'achakach shachach is a vesh, sula, then it'll be possible, because you have to have both simonim. It's true, by a bird, you only have to shecht one simon, but they both have to be capable of being shechted through. They both have to be in their proper position when you start the shechta. And like this, the gageres started out not in the right position. Fine, but that's after they shecht them.
No,
the bird itself can be hanging, but the point is you're right. You don't want the bird to be able to stretch itself out and push its feet onto the ground or whatever, and that's going to pull its neck up and then dislocate the simon. Yeah. Okay.
Why are we saying for one and not for the other?
Because we're saying that, because in the first case, you shechted one simon, and fine, once you shechted one simon, that's it, shechted is over. But what happens after that doesn't matter. The other case is the other way around. You got dislocated before you started the shechta. Shechet is a vesh v'nimtzet gageres shmo. So what happens? You shechted the vesh. Afterwards, you checked and you found that the windpipe is shmuta, is pulled out of place. It's dislocated. The any day in kodim shchita nishmata in la'acha shchita nishmata. You don't know whether that happened before or after you cut the vesh. There hoyamaita, such a case actually happened. But Amru and the Chachamim said, kol sofek b'shchita p'sula. Whenever you have a sofek, whether the shchita was done properly, it's possible. Because you have, first of all, shchita is daraita, the sofek daraita l'chomer anyway. But second of all, you also have that the behema or the oath already had a chazaka of being osur. When it's alive, it's also a zeh menachai. So therefore, in order to take away that chazaka, you need to know for a fact that the shechita was done properly. So the point is, we're mentioning in this braita only the case of shechting the besh, the ilu shechita begargeres loikotami. We're not mentioning the case the other way around, where he shechted the gargeres and then the vesh got pulled out of place. So it sounds like, not like Rav Nachman, it sounds like Rav Adi Ba'ava, that the only way to have a proper shechita is to shech the vesh first. Or not first, but whatever, that if you're going to shech one simon, it has to be the vesh. The answer is not necessarily. You could say, Mishum de gargeres avidu l'ishtemusi. You could say the reason is very simple, because the gargeres, practically speaking, more often is the one that's going to get dislocated. It doesn't mean that if it was the other way around, that maybe the braisa would also mean the other way around. You shechted the kona and then afterwards found that the vesh was dislocated, etc. You'd have the same problem. But the fact is, the vesh doesn't usually get dislocated as easily as the kona.
You shechted the kona and the vesh dislocates, then what?
So we said same idea. In other words, according to Rav Nachman, it wouldn't matter. According to Rav Nachman, that as long as you shecht either one, then you're good. So therefore, the same idea. You shechted the kona, afterwards the vesh got dislocated, no problem. But if it got dislocated before you shechted the kona, or you're not sure whether it was before or after, then you have a problem. Okay, so no proof from that. So no proof from that bright the one way or the other.
You check it out, whatever. If you see it dislocated and you open it up later on, you don't know if it happened before, happened after.
So sometimes we're going to talk about later on. We're going to get to you later on. There are some times when you'll know when it was done. Sometimes you'll know whether it was before or after. First of all, you can observe. But second of all, also, if it's dislocated, if it's hanging limply, you're not going to be able to shecht it properly because shechita requires that it's tight. Therefore, if it's called A.E.F. Shmuta Shatata Shchuta, we'll talk about it eventually later on. But the difference whether he's holding the simonim. The Ramah, by the way, brings an interesting idea. What you do is, we learned in the previous perek, we talked about there's a piece of cartilage at the top of the kona. We called it in the Gemara the Koiva. In modern terms, it's called the thyroid cartilage. It's hat-shaped, right? If you press on it after the shechita, then if the simonim are not shamut, then they will sort of pop out of the flesh over there. And then if you see that, then you know they weren't shamut. Then you know that they were. Then you know that they. Here, I'll show you. I'll show you a picture. Yeah. Yeah. So what you do is here's a chicken neck after it's shechted. What you do is you press over here on the koivan, the thyroid cartilage, and if the simonim were not shamut, if they were not dislocated, then they'll sort of pop out. They'll like stick out a little bit from the neck together, and therefore you'll see. And therefore you know that it was kosher. Therefore you know they weren't dislocated before the shechita. Okay. Okay, so no proof one way or the other, because Rav Adi Ba'ava can understand the braisa as it sounds like, that we're talking specifically about shechting the vesh, and Rav Nachman could say the same rule would be if you shechted the kona and the vesh to grab his pocket. Toshma, shochat shnei chatzoi simon in ba'oif. Another braisa says, if a person shechted only two halves of simonim in the bird, in other words, exactly half of one simon and exactly half of the other, no good, tzula. The answer, because you have to have roif. The ain't sort of loyma behema, needless to say that's true of behema. Rabbi Yehuda oyma ba'oifad sheyishchet is a vesht vesa veridin. Rabbi Yehuda says by a bird you have to shech not only the vesht, but also the veridin, the blood vessels. We talked about in the Mishnah, are we talking about that you have two different types of blood vessels in the neck. You have arteries that take blood from the heart to the other parts of the body and veins that return it. Which ones are we talking about over here? You actually have a machloek that's showing him which ones we're talking about over here. You also have more than one set of them, whatever. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda says you have to shech the veridin for reasons that we'll talk about soon. But the point is, Rabbi Yehuda mentions shechting the vesh specifically. So again, that seems like Rabbi Adi Ba'ava. Why is he mentioning only the vesh? The reason is Mishum de vesh some of the veridin. The reason is very simple, because practically speaking, the vesh happens to be nearer to the veridin. Because the veridin are in the middle of the neck between the vesh, and it depends which veridin we're talking about.
Yeah, but so in the picture, the vesh is just behind the kine. Why do you say closer to the veridin?
That's fine.
The veridin are on both sides.
The veridin are here and here, for example. These are the veridin, at least if one's one understanding, the jugular vein. So you can see they're right next to the vesh. They're right next to the vesh. The kine is further in front of them. Kine, vesh, and then you have behind them the veridin.
space between the...
Okay, I'm not talking about whether there's a space or not. The fact is, they're closer, so therefore, if you're going to cut the viridin, which Rabbi Yehuda is insisting that you do, it's more likely the simen that you're going to cut along with them is going to be the vesh. But not necessarily that it has to be that way, because Rabbi Nachman would be saying the same thing if you cut only the kana, Rabbi Yehuda would say fine, but afterwards you have to cut the viridin as well.
Anyway, when you do a typically normal soup like these days, so what a man can be taking care of all of this. Okay.
That is true, and actually we'll talk about that on Amud Beis, actually, when we get to why Rabbi Yehuda said you have to cut the viridin anyway. But it's true, actually, yes, it says in Shulchan Aruch that, yeah, nowadays, if they usually cut the chicken's head off altogether, then fine, of course, the viridin are taken care of, because all the blood vessels are...
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be doctor done during the shit, that's what we're going to say on Amud Beis. Good enough, as long as it's done while the animal's blood is still warm, so that it'll flow out. And not the animal, the bird, whatever, Rabbi Yehuda only insists on it by bird. Well, let's wait till Amud Beis, we'll get to it. Okay, fine. Toshma. Okay, another braita says, if the person shechted half of the gageres, half of the windpipe, which is not yet enough for a proper shechita, but it's also not yet enough to make the animal, or the bird, trace, because you need roiv of it to be cut through for it to be traced, the shahak de shechita aseret, then he waited long enough that it's conceivably a whole nother shechita could have been done, and that's okay, it's not considered shahia, because again, it's not considered the beginning of the shechita yet. The gama shechita, say later on he finished the shechita, shera, then it's kosher. Now, my lavoi, so shouldn't we assume that this braita is talking about a bird, and therefore my gomra, and what is the word gomar, means gomra the gageras, means he finished cutting through the rest of the gageras, and that would be a pointer of nachim, it's a pointer of adab abba, it's no good because you haven't cut through the vesh. The answer is why, but behema. No, you don't have to say that. You could say the braita is talking about shechting an animal. Or my gomra, and what is the word gomer, means gomer, the shechita kula. It means when he finished, it means that later on he finished the entire shechita. That he cut through the rest of the kana, as well as at least half, as well as more than half of the vesh. But by an oif, you could say that, yes, Rabbi Adam Abba would say this braita is not talking about an oif, because an oif cutting through the kana is neither here nor there, you have to cut through the vesh.
But behema, you're allowed to go twice through the knife?
So that's what we're saying, that if you cut through less than half of the kana, then that's not considered the beginning of the shechita yet. Because again, even if you were to have that, let's say the animal was injured or something, and the kana was damaged, but less than half of its circumference is missing, you're still good. Yeah. Fine. Okay. Toshma. Harei shahoya chatzi kana pogum. Another braita says, suppose that half of the kana was missing, again, half of its circumference, in other words. The hoistif all of kosher, then you added a little bit, you shefted a little bit into that cut, the gomra, and you finished it off, shechita kosher. Then the shechita is kosher, because again, now you have most of the kana has been cut, and the fact that half of it was missing before is neither here nor there. Okay, so again, my lavoif, shouldn't we assume that that's talking about a bird? Or my gomra, gomra lakana, and again, the word gomra means you finished cutting through the kana, and that would be a pointer of Nachman, who says that cutting through the kana or the vesh is good, but not a pointer of adaba abba that you specifically have to cut through the vesh. The answer is, again, lois for behema, or my gomra, gomra la vesh. Again, you could say that it's talking about a behema, and the word gomra means that he finished cutting through the rest of the kana as well as the vesh. Okay, so still no proof one way or the other. Toshma. Ketzad Mokin Chatasari, here's another braita, that says, how do you, it's actually a Mishnah in Zvachim, Ketzad Mokin Chatasari, how do you do Malika on Chatasari? Choysech Shedro Mafrekes Veloy Reifoster, you cut through the spine, you cut through the spinal cord of the Shedra, and the Mafrekes is the neck bones, the spinal cord is through the spine, Veloy Reifoster, without cutting through most of the muscles of the neck, because we learned in the previous paragraph that if you cut through most of the muscles, then the bird is available right there and there, and therefore cutting this among the male. Ad shemagiel avesh oilakana, until he reached, we said before, they have to do it kind of on an angle, from the back of the neck, but sort of on an angle, until he eventually reaches either the vesh or the kana. He giel avesh oilakana, once he reaches either the vesh or the kana, choytzach simenecha, right? He cuts one simen, and then after that he cuts roivbaser, because at that point the shchit has been done, now he can cut the rest of the roivbaser. Uba ola, and if that's as far as a chasa, sorry. Uba ola, and for an ola, sorry, shnaim. Oba shnaim, you have to cut through both simonim or the majority of both of them. So here we clearly see in this that we're saying he has to cut the vesh or the kana. So therefore,
yeah,
no, that's the thing. You do roiv baser after you cut one or both simonim.
Yeah.
So it clearly says vesh or kana. So therefore, it's a clear contradiction in Rav Adar Bar Abba, because he said that all you need is that you need the vesh. He said you need the vesh, and it doesn't matter whether you cut the kana or not. Here we see, as long as you cut the kana, then you're good.
Why don't
You're right, Kyokta. The answer is, you're right, contradiction, and therefore we schlugged up Rabat about it. Okay, Gemara asks, my Havi Allah. Okay, what's the bottom line? Yeah, it's a Mishnah, a Braisa, you can't disagree with it. So the question is, my Havi Allah. So what's the bottom line? What's the outcome of this question? Which one you have to share? What's the one you mean, my Havi Allah? Kedekamu, you just answered that we schlugged up Rabat about it. What do you mean, what's the halacha? The answer is Joma Shiny Hossam Dika Shedro Mafrekis. Yes, but you could argue that over there it's different by Malika, because once you cut through the Shedra and the Mafrekis, and now you're talking about cutting the Simonim, so fine, whichever Simon you cut, by the time you get through the Mafrekis and the Shedra, and okay, you haven't gotten through Roy's Bosta, but still, most of the highest of the animals already go, of the bird rather, is already going away, so cutting either Simon might be enough. That doesn't necessarily prove. By a regular case of Shchita, we start with the Simonim. And in fact, by the way, before she explained, the Gemara said Kyokdan Rav Adaba Ava because he was, what he was saying as far as that you need Dafka of Vesh, he was saying both by Malika and by Shchita. So we slogged him up, at least, that it doesn't apply to Malika. But the Gemara is asking, fine, but the bottom line, Halacha, as far as Shchita, maybe the Halacha could still be like him in Shchita. You can't just prove it from that. From, yeah, maybe my Malika, the Halacha is not like him, but maybe me. But it might, so now we have to ask what we really did. Okay, so we're out of proofs from the Mishnayos and Braisos, so now we're going to bring from an actual case. Toshma, Dahu Bar Abza, Dahava Bei Rava, there was a duck in Rava's household, or maybe it was brought to him for a Shaila, whatever, also Ki Mimasmis Kue Dama, and it was brought, its neck was dirty with blood. In other words, there was a rip someplace in the neck. So now you have a problem. You have to check the Kona and the Vesh to make sure that they haven't been damaged. Now, Rashi learns over here like this. We're not worried now. There could be a case where the animal's neck is injured, and what it was is it was attacked by a wild animal. We're going to talk in the middle of the next perek, in the middle of perek Eilu Terefus, we're going to talk about the din of Zrusa, where an animal was clawed by some kind of predator, where there you have, the din is that you have to check it very carefully to make sure that there's no, the Gemara calls it poison, that was injected by the attacker. We'll talk about it then, I mean, on the face of it. Predatory animals don't have poison per se. One explanation. Well, fine. We're not talking about snakes. We're talking about like wolves or lions or what have you. So one answer is it's bacteria under their claws that get in there and infect whatever it is. We'll get into that later on in the noon. The point is that there's that. Also, we'll get to all those dinim later. But the point is that Rashi learns that here we don't have a possibility of drusa. Therefore, we don't have to worry about checking it to make sure that there's none of that. The only problem is you have to check that maybe the conure or the vesh were damaged. And again, if the conure was damaged, fine, it could be damaged up to half its circumference, and he's still okay. If it's a vesh, even a tiny hole is going to make it straight, so therefore you're going to have to check it. Tosfos disagrees with that, and so do various other Rishonim, and they say we are talking about the topic Jerusa over here. There is a possibility that maybe the animal was clawed, and therefore the question is going to be over here checking the conure or the vesh. You have to check them for any sign of infection or whatever that might have been caused by the attack, whatever. Okay, Omar Rava Hechin. So Omar Rava Hechin Nevin. So Rava says, how are we supposed to deal with the situation? Should we say, okay, we'll shecht it and then we'll check and make sure we'll shecht it and then we'll check and make sure that there are no holes anywhere in the corner of the vesh? Hence, Jumabim came net up for shechet. What happens if you happen to shecht it exactly where there was a hole already? Let's say, it got injured in its vesh. You happen to shecht at that exact location. Now you're not going to be able to see afterwards whether there was a hole.
The vesh, you say that.
Even a small hole. Even a small hole.
When you shecht it, it's just another hole.
Okay, so should we say nivdikei v'hodr nishchatei? Should we say, okay, we'll check it. We'll check it first while it's alive, and then we'll check it. Can't ha'omer Rabba vesh only b'dikam b'chutz elamu b'vnim? Rabba says that the vesh, there's no, it's not valid to check it from the outside, only from the inside, because Rashi explains like this. We're going to learn in the next page. The vesh has two layers. I mean, you know, if you look at it under a microscope, I guess it's got a lot more, but basically it's got two layers. It's got an outer layer, which is red or reddish, and an inner layer, which is whitish. So therefore, on the outer layer, if there's any blood on there, if there's a hole over there and it's bleeding, you're not going to notice because the red is not going to stand out against the red. So the only way to validly check it is to look on the inside and see if you see any blood over there. Then you know whether there's a hole in it from before or after shrinking. again.
One second. Yeah. Does it have to be a complete hole through the...
Yeah, yeah, it has to be a complete hole through both legs.
Partial hole is not...
Well, we'll talk about that in the next paragraph. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. We'll get to that. But the point is...
Partial hole, you don't see it bleeding.
That's the point. No, okay. But the point is, in other words, that if you check the outside and you don't find any evidence of a hole, that doesn't prove anything. You would have to check and see whether the inside layer shows any evidence of a hole. Right. If you see a blood, will stand out against the white part. According to Tosfos that we're talking about over here about the problem of Jerusa, similar idea. The redness that comes from the infection or poison or whatever it is that's injected by the attacker over there, you're not going to see it on the outside of the vest because it's reddish. You're only going to see it on the inside because it would stand out against the white. So what do you do? Omalei Rav Yosef Brei, so Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, answers him, here is how we can fix the situation. Nivde Kela Kona. We'll start by like this. We can check the Kona while the bird is still alive, because that you can do, because again, it only becomes possible if most of the Kona was cut through. So we can make a cut on the outside of the neck and then check the Kona and see whether there's damage to that. Vinishcha Kela Kona. Then we can go ahead and check the Kona. And that'll be good because we check through most of the kana. The lasher, eh? That way we make the bird as kosher. Checking through the kana is enough. The hado lachol the vesh the libdikay. Then after the bird has been shechted, now we have there's no problem what we do with it now. Now we can take the vesh out, turn it inside out without cutting it, and see if there's any blood on the inside.
So
first we cut the kana, but the point is
we cut the kana, but it's kosher.
That's the point. That's the point. So we see clearly a proof over here to what Rav Nachman is saying, that cutting through the kana by a bird is enough. Otherwise this wouldn't work because you'd have to cut through the vesh as well. Oh, not as well. Rabbi said you'd have to cut through the vesh. But Alma Rava, so Rava says, Rava was very impressed because Chakim Yosef Bri, the Tresis kid of Yechon. My son Yosef is as wise in Dinim of Tresis as Rav Yechon. Why Rav Yochanan doctor? It actually brings from later on in our Masechta, where the Gemara mentions that Shmuel sent many, many camel loads, 13 camel loads, it says over there, of Shilus and Hilchos Tzreifus to Rav Yochanan. Showing, in other words, how expert Rav Yochanan was in these days. So therefore, Rav is saying about Rav Yosef, his son, that he's as knowledgeable in Hilchos Tzreifus as a Rav.
So he suggested cutting the kane.
You check the kane while the bird is still alive. That you can do because before the Shitta. Check it to make sure that not more than half of its circumference has been cut through. Oh. Then you shaft it. Then you shaft through the kana. Now the bird is shafted. Then you open up the neck. Take out the vest intact. Take out the vest intact and flip it inside out and see if on the white side
you've
on the inside.
You cut the kana, not beyond the road.
No. You check it while it's still alive. You cut the muscles around it. You cut the muscles around the corner enough to be able to see how much of the corner was damaged. Make sure it's less than half. Before the shritta. Make sure less than half of it is damaged. If it is, then you're so far so good. Go ahead and check it through the corner. Then take out the vest and flip it inside out.
That's what I'm going to do. You check it away from the damaged area because you do have...
No, but you see its neck is all bloody, so you don't know what's the particular part that was... You don't know what was the particular part that was injured. That's the problem.
But if you cut the kana, you see more than half, it's closer, but you gotta go wipe it.
That, because you still have to check whether the vest was damaged while it was alive. If the vest was damaged, if the vest had a hole in it while the bird was alive, it's still fresh.
You're not sure if the vest was, you cut the kana, you be careful
and you don't cut the bird
in. Yeah.
Okay.
And then you turn it inside out, you check the vest, see if there was...
If there was any blood on the inside of it, which would show that.
There was, and that would be a shock.
Alma, so let's finish off. Alma echad, the ka'alma oihai oihai. So we see clearly from this case that the word echad of our mission means either the kana or the vesh is good enough, because otherwise Rav Yosef, the son of Rava's method, wouldn't work. So therefore, that shows the halacha is like Rav Nachman, that whichever one you cut, it's kosher, and not like Rav Abba Ba'ava, that it's apt to be the vesh. That indeed is the halacha, as long as it's roig, right? But again, l'chachila, you should be cutting through most of both and not play any games. Okay. Fine.
Sure.